Did you happen to see what Elon Musk tweeted over the weekend? No, it wasn't Mother's Day congratulations to his brand new baby mama about his baby whose name I cannot pronounce, but rather just pissed off-ness, legal term, at the state of California and one of California's most fame-seeking legislatures hopped right back into the mix. So today we are talking not only about Elon Musk's COVID lawsuits, but the panoply of COVID lawsuits, because, girl, there are so many. Let's talk some shit.
Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit. And we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started.
If you pay attention to Elon Musk, to Tesla, to SpaceX, you know that he doesn't couch his words and kind of says whatever the fuck he wants. Even though he's gotten in trouble for it because he's the CEO of a publicly traded company. So you can't just say whatever you want because it can impact things like your stock prices, which he got in trouble for previously and recently just did again. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Musk versus Alameda County, California. On May 9th, Musk tweeted in two separate tweets, you know, character limits, that, quote, Tesla is filing a lawsuit against Alameda County immediately. The unelected and ignorant interim health officer, in quotes, of Alameda is acting contrary to the governor, the president, our constitutional freedoms, and just plain common sense. Frankly, this is the final straw. Tesla will now move its HQ and future programs to Texas/Nevada immediately, if we even retain Fremont manufacturing activity at all. It will be dependent on how Tesla is treated in the future. Tesla is the last car maker left in California, which is true. Tesla employs 10,000 people at the Fremont factory manufacturing Model X, Tesla's Model 3s, I think Model Ys, and then also maintains a headquarters here with 5,000 some odd individuals. The reason, or at least part of the reason this gained so much traction is one, it's a COVID-related lawsuit with somebody fighting back against government closures, but also because Lorena Gonzalez had to pipe in. If you have been following all of my conversation about California's AB5 law, then this name might ring familiar to you. Lorena Gonzalez is the former labor leader. She led labor unions, which, you know, when it comes to auto manufacturing in California, there is some discontentedness between unions and Tesla. But again, conversation for another day. But Lorena Gonzalez is a former labor leader who's pushing AB5 and pushing back against the gig economy in California, who has become a polarizing figure in California. She responded by tweeting, fuck Elon Musk. Which, you know, politics, I can't even complain about like the way politics has happened on Twitter lately because of our president. Like him, don't like him, the man shouldn't be tweeting a stream of consciousness because he is the president. Politicians generally should not be tweeting streams of consciousness. She wanted the media attention, which she has said in multiple interviews where they're like, well, couldn't you have just been articulate and explained things? And she's like, well, that would have gotten coverage. She did use an asterisk instead of the U when she tweeted, fuck Elon Musk, but it was an intentional, attention-grabbing kind of a tweet. Here's the thing. I don't agree with her. I don't care for Lorena Gonzalez. I do not see eye to eye with her on policies. However, I do not think she should be referred to in, you know, the retweets by racial slurs, gender slurs. I don't think her use of foul language is the issue here. I don't like that when a large provider of jobs is looking to leave California, a legislature's response is basically, fuck you. That's my problem with this. I don't care that she used the word. If she had said, fuck yeah, let's get back to work, as long as we do it safely, maybe I would feel differently. But I feel that California is running businesses out of California as quickly as they're coming in. And I don't believe personally that that's good for Californians. But I hate seeing the way she's attacked after this. However, the president's attacked the same way. I don't necessarily believe it's because she's Hispanic or because she's a woman, though the way that she is talked about in the disparaging comments is off-putting. And, you know, whenever you see someone telling a woman, oh, well, that's real ladylike, it's just gonna piss me the fuck off. So I don't agree with her. I think some of the backlash over the tweet's a bit much, but she was intentionally trolling. She's like the Trisha Paytas of the California legislature. She's just trolling you guys, and she's getting the attention. We should just stop giving it the attention right now. Anyway, Elon Musk said that Tesla's leaving California, that he's suing. He did. Well, he didn't. The lawyers for Tesla did. So the lawyers sued, as lawyers do, and they sued in federal court, arguing that the county of Alameda is going against all of the opening orders. I think that this is partly a stunt. I think that Tesla's trying to push and persuade the county to actually look at Tesla's reopening plan and determine whether the plan is a safe plan for reopening their manufacturing operations. I think there's probably a lot of Tesla owners waiting for their cars to roll off the line at Fremont who are very frustrated that their in-production vehicles aren't coming to them. I think that Tesla is an automobile manufacturer, has been on the precipice financially many, many times. And so this is likely not very helpful. They've, you know, finally got Fremont running really smoothly and production coming off the line in a really consistent way. And then COVID. I feel like that's going to be the punchline in our pop culture for years to come. It's like, oh, everything was going so well. And then COVID. Mm-hmm. So Tesla sued the county of Alameda for overstepping federal and state COVID regulations. They sued for immediate injunctive relief, basically saying to the court, please just block Alameda and tell them not to do this. We'll see how it pans out. I think that Alameda will try to work with Tesla because they don't want to lose as many jobs. But you also have to consider worker safety. And that's what we're going to talk about partly because some of the onslaught of lawsuits we're seeing are regarding employment and worker safety. Just on a side note, by the way, Lorena Gonzalez represents Assembly District 80 down in San Diego. Nothing to do with Alameda County. She just wanted to pitch in and say her piece. It's kind of like when Jeffree Star just got involved in the whole Tati Westbrook, James Charles thing. And it was like between Tati and James. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jeffree Star is getting crazy on Twitter. And you're like, how are you involved in this? Oh, but now you're involved in this. That's what happened. There was a conversation happening without Assemblymember Gonzalez. And she was like, oh, nope. Need to be a part of that. So fuck Elon Musk. That's what she tweeted. I don't think she congratulated him on the new baby. I'm just saying. Anyway, moving on to the onslaught of lawsuits. I have been watching this with interest because I know there are going to be a ton of lawsuits coming out of COVID. I also have looked back at some of the things with regard to like commercial leasing in California, some of the precedents set when tenants are breaking commercial leases. Some of them were set back during Prohibition when it's like, I bought this to be a liquor store and now that's illegal. What do I do? So we're looking at some very old precedent in some areas of law that don't really get dragged out into the light of day all that often. So lawyers are going to be dusting off some older legal theories when it comes to property and government takings and whether government closing down businesses like this is a government taking, if it's not, if it's temporary, if it's permanent, all the constitutional law things. This, I don't mean to make light over 80,000 people have died from COVID. It is not a law school exam, but it is. So this isn't to make light. This is the intellectual pondering of what the outcome of all of this is going to be. And in previous episodes, I've talked about, are kids going to go back to the movies on dates? Like, are you going to have a big cup of popcorn with other people breathing around it? Like, when are we going to feel comfortable again flying on an airplane without a mask on? They're required now. They're required on a lot of airlines that you wear a mask. I don't want to wear a face mask for 5 hours. It's super uncomfortable. But those kinds of social ponderings, the legal ponderings, are also really interesting to me and hopefully interesting to you. So I'm going to break down the lawsuits as I see them coming and then talk about some of the suits that have already been filed, why I think there will be more. And hopefully you're as fascinated by all of this as I am, because this is how the other part of all this works out. It's not just, well, if movie theaters go under, then that strains commercial landlords. And what about all the people who work at the movie theaters? And then the people who supply the movie theaters? And then what about the movie studios? And, you know, they're not going to have their 300 million whatever blockbuster weekends when everybody's going to the movie. What's that look like? So what do studios do? Are they going to tone down the amount of production because they don't know how much they're going to make? Like, those are the wanderings of my mind. And that's what's happening with regard to business and the lawsuits that I think are going to come in droves and are already happening. Employment law, worker safety, is one of the biggest areas I see workers and employers both needing to protect themselves. There is already a lawsuit against Walmart from the estate of an employee who passed away from COVID, allegedly due to being at work and being exposed at work. Exposure to COVID at work raises a lot of questions about workplace safety, about what the OSHA guidelines are, about the liability of businesses who can't adequately protect employees yet require them to come back to work, what that looks like, what employees' options are, if they can sue, if they can not return to work and then sue, if there are any protections for businesses who do the right thing and try to protect workers, but we're also facing a very communicable disease. So how do we protect businesses? How do we protect workers? How do we all work together? And I think the businesses that show care for their workers will rise to the top in this. I think businesses that show a more cavalier get back to work or else attitude are going to struggle. Wage and hour claims become another tangent of that. When you're working from home, if you're getting emails from work outside of work hours and you feel obligated to respond to them, are you going to be able to claim that you are not being compensated for working outside of normal business hours due to demands of the job? And with companies going through layoffs, I can see employees being very nervous about saying no, especially employees who are parenting full-time while kids are not in school, working full-time. It is a juggle. It is a struggle. It is mentally the most exhausting thing. Yes, commuting was exhausting. This is another level of hard, you guys. And we have two parents at home and two kids who are relatively well-behaved, but there's two kids and two adults, and we are still struggling. So for larger families, for families with younger kids, for families with high schoolers that are struggling, all of us are struggling. And to be afraid that you're going to get laid off on top of it and trying to prove your value through working your ass off while you're also trying to school, I can see workers working well over the hours they would normally work if they're in the office and feeling obligated to, raising the issues of employees being able to sue, saying that they were not being compensated for their overtime that was required of them to get the work done, especially if they are covering duties of more employees as layoffs happen and they're still working from home. I know a lot of people in my circle who have two full-time working adults in the home and kids are just working nonstop. I've been getting work done quite late because I do that. I've been second shifting again, working again after the kids go to bed. But now my kids are older and they go to bed later. And that is not, it is not helpful. at all that they're going to bed late. Because then instead of starting work up again at like 8:30, it's like 10. And then it just goes downhill from here and I get no sleep. But it's beside the point. There's actually a suit already underway, a woman in Pennsylvania who sued under the new FFCRA, which is the family's first coronavirus relief act. That is the act that extended a lot of the leave provisions under FMLA to allow people to take protected time off and in some cases paid protected time off due to kids being home from school. She asked work for accommodations and for time off because her kids were out of school and was fired. So she's suing, saying that they couldn't do that under FFCRA's new provisions under the FMLA Act or the modifications to the FMLA Act. And then there's also employees that are suing, saying they're not being compensated for the supplies they needed to get a home office up and running, and that they're being asked to work from home. They need to have stuff there and aren't being compensated from work. So there are so many angles to this. And I know it's something businesses are struggling with as they're looking at reopening. It's how to protect the workers and how to protect yourself from lawsuits in really uncertain times against a really pervasive virus. And I don't know what the right answer is other than to follow OSHA guidelines and do everything you can as a business owner to ensure worker safety. And if workers aren't taking it seriously, they might not be the right workers. There are a lot of people out of work right now. I'm sure you can find people who will take their safety seriously. There's another whole class of lawsuits going on over cancellations. So cancellations of travel, concerts, sports, athletic gyms, like where you go work out and stuff. God, I sound so unfamiliar with the gym. It's like, we know what a gym is, Emily. Thank you. Colleges and things like summer camp. So with these things that have been canceled, obviously travel got totally canceled. Everyone I've talked to that has been dealing with travel has had a nightmare trying to get their actual refund. Airlines will say, oh yeah, we'll refund you, but those refunds aren't coming through. Some airlines are like, we can't refund you. We're going to give you credits. It looks like Norwegian is going under and not refunding people. The last that I looked, that was happening. And there are class action lawsuits already filed against United, Delta, and American saying, hey, they're not refunding. They're giving credits. They're supposed to be refunding and this kind of thing. So people are angry trying to refund travel and struggling to do so. Then StubHub. StubHub is a large ticket aggregator where you can resell concert tickets, because apparently, unless you're some kind of bot, you can't even get tickets through Ticketmaster anymore. Like, there is no going to wait in line up. You get in some kind of digital queue. I've done this for concerts. It's miserable. And then there's like this weird flex pricing going on Ticketmaster. So when tickets are super in demand, you know, like immediately when they go on sale, they increase the prices because they're assholes. I hate you, Ticketmaster. Anyway, that's a rant, but StubHub aggregates and resells tickets to all kinds of events. StubHub changed their refund policy as COVID was happening to give credits to their site for 120% of the value of the ticket instead of refunding it. I imagine StubHub doesn't have the money sitting in their bank account to refund all the tickets, but if you paid for concerts and sports, you should be able to get a refund if the event is canceled. And that used to be the refund policy. So there's lawsuits, as you can imagine, over the change in the refund policy from StubHub, because people don't know when concerts are going to resume. And when they do resume, how much it's going to cost. And if they're going to cut the capacity of venues, ticket prices are going to go up because they're going to be harder to get. So who knows? But StubHub, people want their refunds. You know, they don't want credits for an uncertain future. The same thing is happening with gyms, physical workout type gym club things. You know, people pay monthly, but they can't go. So they're like, hey, you should have paused our membership. And the gym's like, no. So there are lawsuits going on from all the like big athletic clubs like New York Athletic Club and stuff like that, of members saying, you're still charging me and I can't come. And the gyms are like, hey, it's in our policy. Like, it's no fault of ours that we can't provide service, so we still get to charge. And that's when you see clauses like the force majeure clause coming back to not protect consumers, but to protect the business owner who structured the contract, saying it's through no fault of our own. We have been shut down and you can't hold us responsible for that because this is not our fault. So you still need to pay. Colleges are the other category. Well, colleges and then summer camps, because it's like where you send your bigger kids and where you send your younger kids. But colleges are being sued by students for tuition, arguing largely that the universities aren't providing what was paid for. That's that full and rich academic experience, because you can't say, I just want to be with my friends, not at my house and party and ask my teacher questions during office hours so I understand. I don't want to be given a bunch of work to read and then just do a Zoom call. Like, I'm not in a distance learning program, but you are now. And I can understand why students are so upset. The cost of college tuition right now is substantial. And to be paying all of that money and feel like you're not getting a rich academic experience and not actually learning anything, I understand that. And I understand where the colleges are coming from too, saying we're still paying our professors to teach you even though you are remote. So where can we refund you from? We're still providing a version of the service. Though universities, a lot of them have prorated, you know, on-campus housing and food plans and things like that. But I can see that this is going to change the landscape of colleges, because it's going to make people really evaluate what they're paying for and if they're getting the service that they're paying for. I think we used to look at college as a, you have to go to college to get a job. It's the expected thing for you to do, depending on where and how you grew up, and for some, an opportunity to change their circumstance. So college was viewed as being so much more than the obtaining of knowledge. And I think students are probably going to evaluate, oh, I'm learning. I don't really need to be there to do this. And maybe there's other ways to learn what's going to help me in my chosen profession or help me determine what that is. Maybe this environment isn't correct. And maybe it will help adults reevaluate that as well. I know for us, by us, I mean me and my spouse, you know, my baby daddy, we don't necessarily believe that our kids have to go to college. They might want to. They might choose a profession where you still need substantial advanced education, or they may not. And we're okay either way, because I don't think it puts any value on you as a human or on your intellect if you went to college or not. So I hope that we will start looking at college as a good or service that we are purchasing, not as a rite of passage or a automatic value on what a smart and or good and or, you know, righteous person you are. I don't know why those are the words that came to mind, but they were. I think college has been overhyped. I don't think everyone needs to go to college. I think there's lots of jobs you can do without going to college. And I think the amount that kids are paying for college is staggering. And I wouldn't want to be saddled with modern day student loans without a college experience entering a crap ass job market over the coming years. I get it. I'd be mad too. The other people who are mad are the parents in California who paid for Galileo summer camp, which just filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is not refunding the parents and has given parents the option to have their money put towards next year's summer camp. But now that it's in bankruptcy, whether the parents get paid back and whether Galileo camps stay running or not will be determined in the bankruptcy process. I am sure that there are other summer camps going through this that are closing their doors because it's uncertain. California has really been aggressive in how they've handled this, but Los Angeles County has so many people. California has so many people. I understand the concern. I understand the frustration. And I understand the parents who paid for these camps at oftentimes the middle of February, because that's when you get the pre-registration discount, the sibling discount. Look, man, these camps are expensive, y'all. They are not cheap. To have other people entertain your kids during the summer. It is not inexpensive. And I get why parents are frustrated that they couldn't get refunds on camp, knowing that camp's not going to happen. And now that Galileo has filed for bankruptcy and said camps are not happening this summer, they're like, we'll be back in 2021. If everyone's lost their jobs, though, that doesn't really help. They could probably use the money right now. Thanks. But Galileo is not going to be the only bankruptcy we see before the end of this. And we have seen so many business bankruptcies. We're going to see more. The CARES Act actually added a new bankruptcy provision that is supposed to help small businesses in bankruptcy. And small business, they kind of have two options for bankruptcy. You've got like a Chapter 7, which is liquidate everything, we're closing. And then a Chapter 11, which is a please help us shuffle things around so that we can maybe kind of try to, Mike could stay open, versus Chapter 7, which is like, yeah, we out, take what we've got, liquidate it, pay the creditors we can, and peace. So when we talk about the Chapter 11s, it is the companies that are trying to stay in business and reorganize and break things like contracts, leases, restructured debts, and things like that. And what we're seeing right now is places like J. Crew, Neiman Marcus, Pier 1 Imports, the summer camp. I did an episode about the Boy Scouts of America bankruptcy filing, which was a few months ago now, but that was to avoid lawsuit liability, really. But now we're seeing this wave of legitimate, how do we stay in business bankruptcies? And that's on top of all the business closures. And I'm sure you're seeing them in your area too. But large chains here in California, like Soup Plantation, the stationery store Papyrus, and the stationery giant Crane Stationery, all going out of business, along with sporting goods stores like Modal's Sporting Goods. So we're seeing a wave in the bankruptcy filings. And the effect of that is going to be then creditors aren't getting paid and banks are going to start to struggle. And so it's all these ripple effects of the shutdowns. I mean, that's what it is. It's ripple effects of the shutdowns. And businesses who are trying to stay in business are grasping at straws. Two of the businesses pointed out in an article that I was reading regarding business closures due to COVID indicated that David's Bridal had just come out of Chapter 11. So Chapter 11 is a long process where they go through a restructuring and then it's agreed to, and then you go through the process. But David's Bridal just finished their Chapter 11 process in January 2019. Like, oh, so sorry, David's Bridal. You're just getting clear of it. You know, you're just getting kind of back on your feet after closures and restructuring. And a year in, you get hit with this. And it was speculated in the article that David's Bridal might not be able to recover from this. And if it does, it'll be in a much different format. The same thing for a company like Joann's Fabrics. Their financials were already struggling due to some of the trade issues with China and a lot of the supply chain struggle that they were having. And then with this closure, businesses that were already financially precarious are not going to be able to bounce back from a two-month closure plus the societal fear of not wanting to go back out. So businesses that weren't already well-situated to be online and businesses that heavily rely on discretionary income are going to struggle because people are struggling. That said, businesses are kind of pissed about two things. One, the Paycheck Protection Program. I'll be right back with that. Two, business insurance. So if you're an online business, you might not have this type of business insurance because generally it wouldn't apply to you. But brick and mortar businesses generally have some type of business interruption insurance. My husband for 15 years ran a really successful dental practice locally to us and had, I will never forget the phone call I got, but had a sewer pipe burst at his office at like 5:45 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day. And he called and was like yelling into the phone, like, because there was poop water coming up through the floor and running out the front door of his dental practice. It was horrifying for him and for his staff. It took a full to the studs interior cleanup of the office. We had to send all of the equipment in to be sanitized and cleaned because, you know, poop water and dental equipment. Our business interruption insurance covered the time we were closed and our overhead to continue to pay staff, covered the remodel, essentially, as it was, or the cleanup, the remediations, the word that I was looking for, covered the remediation, covered, you know, having everything taken out of the office and sanitized so we could get back up and running again. It was a little over two months of a process, but that's generally what business interruption insurance is written for. Temporary physical losses, water damage, storm damage, pipe burst, fire, those sorts of things. And a lot of these policies, I was unaware of this, but a lot of these policies also have provisions against things like pandemic because of how many businesses were closed or impacted when SARS happened. So claims are being denied. So here are business owners thinking, okay, well, my business is interrupted. I have business interruption insurance. Only for the insurance companies to go, no dice, friend. You didn't have, you know, a physical business interruption. Or our policy specifically prohibits business interruption due to pandemic. So businesses are grasping at ways to stay viable, not close their doors, not file for bankruptcy. And when business insurance isn't an option, businesses turn to the Paycheck Protection Program, which was touted as the savior for small business. We're going to help small businesses stay afloat. Yeah, well, we saw that not go super well. We talked in other episodes, they'll be linked in the show notes, about how the Paycheck Protection Program was rolled out, about the alleged loan stacking of the banks, which is the argument that banks were cherry picking whose applications they pushed to the front of the line first. And I was actually reading an article in American Banker. I know, I do research on the show, people. I don't just sit here and talk. I read things. It's amazing. But American Banker, and they were talking about the banking perspective. Normally, I don't give a shit about the banking perspective. You know me, no empathy for the big banks. But on this, I kind of see their point. The bank's concern for fraud is substantial, and there are already arrests happening over Paycheck Protection Program fraud. The concern of the banks is that they're going to be stuck saddled with these loans that aren't forgiven because people didn't do it right, that are at 1%. So the bank is at a potential to lose money due to the fraud. Look, the banks are still getting paid by the government to facilitate these loans. The banks wanted to pick who they facilitated these loans for, like who they lent the money to limit their own risk by just facilitating loans for people they'd already had a lending relationship with, whose businesses they already worked with, because there's less of a risk of fraud. My words are getting hard at this point in the episode. There's less of a risk for fraud dealing with businesses that you already have an established relationship with because you know them. But when the second round of PPP funding came out, the banks were already getting smacked down for not facilitating loans for people who didn't have an existing lending relationship. So now banks are having to turn around very quickly loans to people they don't have a relationship with and don't have an easy way to check for fraud because they're not doing a full underwriting process. Because the government was like, yeah, it'll be fine. yeah, just give people the money. and first come, first serve, like give people money. So it's no surprise that there are already arrests over this. Now, the Paycheck Protection Program had criminal prosecution provisions written into it. Like, not only can we fine you money, but you can go to jail and shit. So the first arrest came right at the beginning of May with an individual who applied for PPP loans on behalf of businesses that no longer existed. And they already have all the emails between him and his co-conspirator saying, hey, who's going to, you know, fraudulently create these payroll documents and those payroll documents? The thing that kind of stuck me on this story was that one of the gentlemen involved in the conspiracy was applying on behalf of a Rhode Island restaurant. And the bank, also in Rhode Island, went and drove by the restaurant. In my mind, this is how I imagined this went. Some banker sitting there going, oh, I know that restaurant. I used to like that restaurant. Hey, Jim, remember this restaurant? Didn't we used to go there? Yeah, we dug it, right? Didn't they close? Yeah, I thought so too. Oh, right. Because they closed in 2018. So somebody at the bank drove by the restaurant and was like, yeah, they're all the way closed, like long gone closed. Turns out the dude who fraudulently applied for the PPP loan on behalf of the closed restaurant is the brother of the restaurant owner. So he's just like, you know, I'll just borrow that. I'll pretend I'm you. So it's like fraudulent loan documents, identity theft, all kinds of good stuff. And some kind of family drama in there, because how are they going to make sure that the loans were forgivable? Were they just going, oh, yeah, they were just going to fraudulently manufacture all those documents to show payroll. Where were they going to get the social security numbers for all the employees who supposedly got the payroll? I mean, I helped businesses apply for PPP loans. The 940 payroll documents are pretty extensive. You need like the 940 and the 941 IRS documents, and they are extensive. But I suppose if you just had one, you could copy it. But I don't know how you can expect that that wouldn't get caught. I think people are expecting that the government is so busy with, you know, a global pandemic crisis that they're not going to check. However, I imagine that there are people in the Justice Department who are just as vengeful as I am, who are like, no, you will not steal this money from small businesses. Hopefully they were also righteously outraged when like Ruth's Chris got the money and like Harvard got the money. But there are people already being arrested for Paycheck Protection Program fraud. And I am going to keep up on the stories of people being arrested for Paycheck Protection Program fraud, because it gives me some hope that at least this is being kind of sort of regulated. It wasn't rolled out great. It was rolled out kind of fast and dirty. Yes, there's a whole bunch of class action lawsuits going on against the banks for cherry picking who they were lending money to. Yes, businesses got locked out. Yes, businesses in underserved areas seem to have gotten disproportionately hosed. Yes, all of that is true. All of it's unfair. All of it's a mess. However, watching people get arrested for it just kind of makes me feel better. Said the former prosecutor. Because, you know, sometimes when you can do nothing else, you can at least arrest the bad guys who are doing shady shit. And on that note, I hope today's show found you well, brought you a giggle, and I'm going to leave you with my COVID sign-off that I forgot last week. You guys, I've been really stressed. COVID is hard. So I forgot, but we're back. We're kind of getting it together. So to all of you out there, wherever this show finds you, may your toilet paper be plentiful. May your Wi-Fi be strong. May your family be well. And may the odds be ever in your favor. I'll see you back here next week. Bye, friend. Thank you so much for listening. I know what it's like to find a podcast you connect with, and then you want to talk about it, and you want to talk about the things you've heard, and you want to chat with other people and hear their opinion. And sometimes that's not the people that are around you. I mean, you can always tell them to listen. But I've created a community for us to keep those conversations going, for me to answer your questions, and to share some behind the scenes and exclusive content, and maybe some deeper takes on the stories as we talk about them. So if you want to join that conversation with the Get Legit community, come on over to www.getlegitlive. I'd love to see you there. So come on by, say hello, and join the conversation.